Welcome back to the Film Experience Podcast. I'm your host, Nathaniel. Look how regular we are. Aren't you proud of us? I got the gang together on the phone, and here we go again. Enjoy.
Hello.
I had to put on my ice pack.
Oh, no. Why?
Oh, my back has been for like a week.
Oh, well, that's awful. But
can't Monty massage you or something?
He tries with a paw when he wants to eat on my
Hopefully
face.
Hopefully we could teach cats to do useful things for us. And be
It's true. Welcome to our fourth episode. You guys, we're just roaring through the season so far.
We are amazing.
We're killing it.
We're having our own spectacular every weekend.
That's true.
This is Nathaniel from the Film Experience, and I'm here with Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks.
And the Oscar-nominated Diane Warren song that most encapsulates my feelings about Joe is How Do I Live from Con Air.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. We actually
Next.
Went...
Joe, do you have any way to respond to that?
Well, I do. I should. I suppose I could respond to that with, oh, what the fuck. Now I can't remember the name of the Up Close and Personal song. I'm sorry, Michelle Pfeiffer. I can't remember the name of the Up Close and Personal song.
Oh, what is that song?
Oh, it's Because You Loved
Me. Oh, yeah. I'm everything yes. I am because you love me.
Because you love me.
It's a very progressive
That's
movie
how that
with gender
explains
politics.
My feelings for all of you.
But it could be. Okay, good. The world speaks through Diane Warren is what Joe lives to tell us.
As
his birthday week, you know, observed.
Katie Rich from Cinema Blend.
Now, we missed
the part on the podcast. You were just talking about karaoke. So what song did you sing?
Oh, well, I didn't go to karaoke. I am getting Joe's tales of karaoke. I mean, at this point, there are lots of Diane Warren songs to choose from, but the one that speaks to me is I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, because I like to think of Joe singing on a TV screen as I cry and miss him, and he gets shot off into space.
don't we all?
That sounds like hidden hostility.
No,
get out of here!
No, Joe is a hero. He's going to save the world.
There's nothing more romantic you can do than blow up an asteroid for your beloved and then get back to her really fast.
Yep.
Well, you guys, I'm on the Diane Warren Wikipedia page in the awards tab. She won the Broadcast Film Critics Association Award for, wait for it, Music of My Heart.
Oh.
I remember that song.
So just chew on that one.
Well, take Daniel's answer before he can speak.
I didn't even know this was going to be the opening question, but mine would, of course, be You Haven't Seen the Last of Me Yet
of
for
course.
Burlesque.
Golden Globe
because
winning, You Haven't Seen the Last of Me.
There's just no killing me. The Lord knows the internet has tried. My back has tried. But I will lip sync on.
And on. And on. Oh, wait, that's a different.
It's a different Diane song. Warren.
That's what beat her for How Will I Live. Mm. Anyway.
Well, that went well.
Diane Warren, you were with us always.
It's funny that you guys were talking about karaoke when I signed on, though, because I don't have a karaoke song, and every time I'm in a situation where there's karaoke, I curse myself for not, like, practicing something.
For not having a standby?
Yeah.
Yeah. It helps to have one standby, at least, that may get repetitive for your friends, but at least gives you something to do.
Exactly. And well, you build off of it.
And I always want to do Missy Elliott, but I just can't sing that fast.
That would be fantastic. Oh, my God, I'm starting a fund to get you to sing
Missy Elliott. We need to kickstart that.
Yeah, exactly.
And
Someone has delicious ice water on this.
Yeah, no, it's me. I'm sorry. I'll stop slurping.
It's okay. No, it just makes me jealous.
He's drinking his ice pack.
Okay, so we were going to talk about two movies this week, Spectacular Now and Lovelace.
The natural double feature.
So who is just dying to talk about one of those? Which do you want to start with?
Well, I just saw Lovelace yesterday, so it's very fresh in my
mind. I did too, so let's start there.
Okay. Worth it, if only for the hairstyles. Like, that alone, like, whoever got to just sort of play in the sandbox that is that time period and that sort of like niche of America during that time. And like, I don't know, every time they changed a scene in Amanda Seyfried's hair was different. I was like, that's awesome. And I actually thought she was very, very good.
I am a plus on Amanda with freckles.
Yeah. Yeah.
She looked great.
And she managed to have kind of a ridiculous accent without making it seem like she was shining a spotlight on her own ridiculous accent.
I thought the accent totally worked for me. I was just like, it seemed to come in and out.
Well, that is true. I think that's probably true. I think she kind of like outshines everything else in the movie by a good bit, and it sort of shows up some of the other lesser, less subtle performers, Sharon Stone. But
you are ruining our collective chance to befriend Sharon Stone right now.
I'm sorry.
We were doing so well. I saw Lovelace at Sundance, so it's been a very long time since I saw it, and it kind of just, it's mostly vanished out of my brain. I remember enjoying Adam Brody, because I enjoy him in most things, and him as a porn star just made some weird sense. And thinking that, I know, Peter Sarsgaard on the, like, you know, he tends to do the creep thing pretty often, and I thought he was turning it up a little too high in this. And I liked Amanda Seyfried fine. It's, I don't know, somehow the role, even though it's a central character and she's the one going through everything, it didn't feel like it demanded as much from her as I would have thought.
Mm-hmm. I every time I see Peter Sarsgaard in one of these, like, creepy guy roles, I just feel bad for Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
because he can't possibly be that way in real life, and yet it's, like, the only way people cast him.
He must be awful to argue with, like, when he's mad at you. Like, he he's like a loving husband, but then when you're in a fight, you're like, oh, no, now you're doing the creep thing.
Yeah. He's going to strangle me. He's going to assault me.
Just because I wouldn't do the dishes.
He's going to turn out to be already married.
Yeah, that whole thing was very unsubtle, unlike... And, I mean, I realize this is, like, based on a true story, so there are, like, actual, like... real life issues of like whatever fidelity to the story that you want to have. Mm-hmm. But like, there's just, we've seen sort of this battered woman story before. It was just sort of like this continuation of brutality, like as the movie goes along. It's just like, to what end? I'm not entirely sure.
Mm-hmm. And there's that mid film juncture where they kind of want to, you know, I don't know if they wanted to surprise you exactly, but where they kind of rewind a little bit on events you've already seen and reveal what we all totally intuited anyway, which is a difficult, you know, it suggested that the movie was really underestimating our sense of things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't think it was like all that well executed, but I did think structurally it had some use there because, you know, I think that would work with a lot of biopics actually, just to mix them up a little, because they're always sort of the rise and fall, but here you had the rise, and then instead of going directly into the fall, you just go back and look at how shitty the rise was.
I'm totally sympathetic to, like, you know, trying something, you know, structural or formal, but I thought it was actually kind of a good scene when I couldn't quite figure out if everybody was so dumb in the hotel room that they actually thought what they were overhearing was, you know, sex. Or if, like, the stakes of, like, how just nobody wants to acknowledge when they know those things are happening. Like, it just kind of... It wasn't a great scene on the replay, and it also kind of ruined the previous scene. By like, but what you didn't know... Totally knew.
This creepy guy beats her up.
Yeah. I just related, because I know if they made a movie of my life about my fabulous blogging life, if you rewound, it would be like... mental breakdowns over typos.
Cats and ice packs.
Your cat punching you in the face.
All the lonely hours at the computer. It's not all glamour, kids.
I was covetous of his 70s underwear. I liked those bright colored briefs. That's my takeaway.
Always the important stuff.
Mail us some.
I loved a lot of the costumes, actually. That one number that was like all the giant fruits on Amanda.
Yes, with the slot machine cherries.
Yeah.
Also, I have to say, a little bit illuminating, I never knew that that was the plot of Deep Throat.
So
that was the actual story.
As a serious academic, you know, I went to the mat and watched Deep Throat on some website that's probably fueling magma into my computer right now. But I watched it the night before because wow. I didn't really know what, I mean, I knew what the conceit was about her body, but I didn't know what the plot was.
Right.
And it was kind of fun to like catch like the first 10 minutes of this movie is just her driving on a highway. It's unbelievable. And the movie's only an hour and 5 minutes long. I will have you know. As though you guys don't already know this, but I'm just helping you out. But what's weird about the movie is that it's kind of funny. Deep Throat. Like there
like
are these
intentionally funny?
Yeah, like there are these like the character Adam Brody's playing is like this doofus. Like ridiculous doctor who's the first one who finds out about her throat. And she whatever. Like so some of the comedy in the movie or some of the occasional sort of sweetness in it is weirdly kind of from Deep Throat. Uh-huh. Which I would not have guessed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I liked to the. I mean, I thought Amanda Seyfried was really good, also. And I felt like the movie's heart was clearly in a cool place of wanting to, you know, sort of stick with Linda after she's extricating herself from this and like getting on Donahue and having totally new takes on
God,
what
that
happened
Phil Donahue
to her.
Archive footage too was something else.
Was amazing, right? But it just
and you
felt,
forgot
it just,
that that's how he treated everybody. Basically, it's just like. This kind of incredulous, patronizing, like, how could you possibly have done the things you've done?
Yeah. And it just felt really truncated, that chapter in the film. And that would have been kind of new to see somebody kind of totally radicalized the way that Linda Lovelace did and become so antagonistic to her own former legacy for, you know, totally great reasons. So I would have been interested to see more of that, and I thought it looked like Amanda Seyfried was going to be kind of interesting to follow and how she performed that character. You know, I'm sure they had 5 cents to work with. So.
Yeah, that's very
well,
clear.
I also have an experience with Deep Throat.
Well, don't put it that way.
Don't not put it that way, though. Speak your truth. We'll
no,
listen.
This was a long time ago, but I, out of curiosity, because it is like, I think it's still the highest grossing. I mean, it was like a porn film that went mainstream, of course.
Yeah.
But I rented it in a hotel room once out of curiosity, and it was censored. So I turned it off, and like it had like these weird like things happening, so you couldn't see the actual like penetrative things.
Wow.
And I was just like, what? I didn't even know hotels did that. And it was quite a while ago, but I think it was in college. But
God,
so I know I have never seen it. I watched like 10 minutes of it. Well, 10 minutes of it, like past the car driving.
Yeah.
So I tuned in and out. I don't remember, but I had actually seen the scene that Adam Brody was doing.
Oh, with
the
so doctor. Like all you need to know.
Right. Which so that part was really funny to me because I did think he was capturing the humor of it well.
Yeah, Adam Brody is sort of become a reliable little sort of. He'll show up. Do a small little thing, and then he'll leave. And I don't know. I just really like his presence on things. Mm-hmm. Liked him in Damsels in Distress quite a bit. And, the Diablo Cody one that I always stick up for that nobody likes.
Jennifer's Body.
I thought he was really good in that. Yeah, I thought it was okay. I was surprised to learn it was from the directors of like Times of Harvey Milk.
Celluloid Closet.
Yeah. Like, okay, that's interesting.
And not dissimilar from that Howl movie that they made. Like,
right.
Like, they do seem to have ideas about what a biopic could be like, or trying to experiment with it a little bit, but I just wonder if they're working with the budget that they need, or if they just are, I mean, you know, their documentaries are amazing. And
yeah.
That's already a lot to bring to the party. I liked Robert Patrick in it. I liked the casting of him in that part.
I did too. Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of things going for it, but there was something about it that didn't work but didn't quite transcend is what I mean.
Yeah
I think that's probably the right
and I don't know, like, this is gonna sound like completely like lurid probably, but I don't know that it was, I think it was maybe a little timid for the subject matter.
Yeah.
Kind of flat, just the way that it just kind of goes step by step in that biopic way, and you're just not digging into what this crazy world really must have been like.
Yeah, I mean, I know that that's a hard thing to talk about in film without being guilty of what you're, you know, like her exploitation or whatever.
Right.
And that's a tough line to walk, just the way, you know, satires of, like, violence, like, you know, always makes me think of Natural Born Killers, where people are like, it's doing exactly what it's saying is bad to do.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I thought it just seemed like a little, like, timid. Like, the fact that even in the background of scenes, when they're watching porn, they're like, not showing you it. They're being careful to hide it so that they're not, like, an X-rated movie.
Right.
It just felt a little bit like those silly Austin Powers things where something blocks your view of every, you know, piece of nudity.
Well, that's what was interesting at Sundance, because there were a lot of very heavy-duty, sexually-themed films, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt made this movie Don John, which is all about this guy's addicted to porn, and it featured a lot of porn in it, which was, you know, I think has probably been cut out for the theatrical cut. And then Lovelace premiered late in the festival, and it kind of came along, and everyone was like, oh man, it's the movie that's actually about porn, we've had this festival about all this sex, what's it going to be like? And then it was timid, exactly like you were saying, and it felt very strange compared to all the movies that had come out before it.
Mm-hmm. And obviously the actors are worried.
Yeah. Don John is now a movie in which he constantly masturbates, like, in a t-shirt and sweatpants, like, behind a desk. Like, one way to go. Okay.
Which leads me to ask, like, have you seen a movie about porn, maybe other than Boogie Nights, that you think really worked in discussing the subject matter? Like, I obviously, like, when I, you know, was thinking about this film, it's like, it's hard to get away from Boogie Nights because it's probably the most acclaimed version of anything that's been about pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just great. But is there anything else that anybody's seen that they think is worth seeing?
I can't remember how much Wonderland got into the actual porn aspects.
Because you can only remember Lisa Kudrow?
Yeah, kind of.
Yep.
I'm trying to
think. Which is often the case with her movies.
Yeah, well,
yeah, exactly. Maybe I just haven't seen enough movies about pornography. Maybe that's a deficiency in my cinematic life. No, Boogie Nights really just sort of takes up my entire brain when I try and think of that subject.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they were like, freckles are her thing, I'm like, no, that's Amber Waves thing, the foxiest bitch in the world.
I mean, the only ones I can think of are the ones that are kind of doom and gloom from the beginning, like Lilia Forever.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I thought it was actually kind of gutsy of Lovelace to not completely make nightmarish and pathologize from the get-go, that we actually had some sense of what Linda was.
That she had actually like freed herself sexually before.
Or at least was like kind of like, you know, nervous but kind of interested and like kind of uncertain about the whole thing, but that it wasn't editorializing so heavily that from the get go we're like, oh god, she's entering the dungeon, like, and then there's that was kind of interesting to see.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to get that. I mean, obviously these are like Lilia Forever needs you to know from the first second that this is just terrible, which is like a legit POV, but that's all I can think of.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was that movie
is persuasive.
I didn't really love it, but that Starlet movie from last year.
Oh,
I loved that. You reminded me.
Yeah. I love that movie too, actually.
And that sort of like that part of it snuck up on me where I wasn't quite expecting them to go into that industry and sort of have it be that kind of thing where it's just sort of, it looks like it's a call center for some sort of like customer service operation, and you walk into that sort of shanty warehouse, and that's where
Felt so authentic to me, even though I have no actual experience in knowing what would be authentic.
Exactly. But it just seems right.
Please.
But yeah, the interesting thing about that in Starlet is that it's so not the plot.
Right.
Yeah.
That is just like part of the sort of environment that we're
Local color.
Yeah.
Does the canyon, I have not seen the canyons, does it get into porn at all, or am I just being kind of blinded by the casting of James Dean?
Well,
I came home from Lovelace and watched the canyons because
on
the Spectacular Now, it did seem like the right movie to see next. No. Their thing is like calling people over to the house to have fun with, but they're not. And they're shooting movies, but the movies they shoot are not porn.
Oh, okay.
I watch the canyons, so you don't have to.
I think you could probably stretch it into this sort of modern idea of, like, anybody with, you know, a phone camera and an XTube account is, you know, in the porn-making business. But that doesn't really, like, explore that at all beyond, like, a throwaway comment there.
And I bet most of those movies that people make on their phones are better than The Canyons.
Oh, yeah, probably.
I will happily continue my life of not seeing The Canyons.
So you're making good choices, Katie Rich.
Thank you.
So am I remembering this wrong, though, speaking of Lindsay Lohan, that wasn't there two competing Linda Lovelace biopics?
Yeah, she
and
was supposed to be in one.
And only one got made, and was she supposed to be in the one that Amanda took over?
Yeah.
No, she was supposed to be in a different one.
Oh, okay.
And was going to be taken over by Malin Ackerman.
Oh, right,
yeah. Well, at least the Lovelace movies are one up on the
Nick,
the Janis Joplin movies that have made.
Nick is our official Malin Ackerman historian.
That's right. That's right. That Sorry. Tracking device is super reliable, I have to say.
So, Joe, you were talking about... Yeah, because I was actually going to bring this up, the Janis Joplin thing.
Yeah.
But isn't that still... Isn't Lee Daniels now going to do it with Amy Adams?
God, I feel like that's like the great white whale of modern filmmaking, or just sort of, I don't know, Lucy with the football or something.
Lee Daniels has made a ton of money with The Butler already, so he can probably do whatever he wants.
Yeah,
so
he can probably.
If he really wants to do it.
His get out of jail free card.
That could be amazing. Given Lee Daniels and just what he could do that's crazy with the subject matter, I mean, it could be amazing in a terrible way, but I'm intrigued.
Can I read you something?
What will he do with the title?
What will they do with the title?
We have with that title.
They'll probably wind up calling it Jackie Jormjop.
Janis Joplin, based on the life of Janis Joplin, by Lee Daniels.
Starring Amy Adams, the complete title.
Can I read you something from the trivia page of Lovelace?
Yes.
On IMDb?
Please.
Demi Moore was supposed to appear in a cameo as Gloria Steinem.
Oh, that's right.
But dropped out
due
to health issues.
Oh, I thought she got cut.
Mary Louise Parker was considered as a replacement, but Sarah Jessica Parker was cast. Parker accepted the role a week before filming ended, but her scenes did not make the final cut.
Well, if only that happened more often.
Ouch. So mean.
I can't believe we've been denied Sarah Jessica Parker's Gloria Steinem.
I know.
Well, and her on-screen reunion with Chris Noth. I mean, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Who, can I just say, I thought he was really good in that?
I did too, actually.
Like, I didn't see Mr. Big at all, and I love when actors don't remind me at all of their most famous role.
Yeah. I think part of it is that character, you're just so happy finally when that character intervenes and sort of...
This is not about pornography per se, but one movie I kept thinking of, and maybe it's because Eric Roberts had a cameo, was Star 80.
Oh, yeah.
Which I totally thought is one of the top-notch movies about sort of the seedy, seedy aspects of fame.
Right, yeah.
But Bob Fosse is always amazing, but that's probably what I meant when I was bringing up Timidity, because, like, when you've seen movies like that, or, like, Boogie Nights that just go full throttle for what they're about,
yeah,
it's hard to take sort of, like, a halfway movie. Have any of you seen that, Star 80?
I haven't.
I have not.
The DVD is, like, I think, pan and scan, and so it hasn't been super easy to see.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it in sort of, like, a furtive moment in high school. I rented the VHS and was trying to watch it on secret, you know, because it's like really, you know, very, very adult, you know.
Who is the female lead? Is it Mariel Hemingway?
Yes. Uh-huh. And it was completely way, way too adult for me because I was like terrified the entire time I was watching it.
It's so funny, those movies when you were young that like that really feel too transgressive for either how old you are. I remember watching The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. I was like 12 years old or something like that. And just the parts that you expect to be the scariest things later on, they were whatever. Like, that whatever. I was scared by the movie. But the part at the beginning where not only her, like, doctor husband, like, fondles Annabella Sciorra inappropriately, and then when Rebecca De Mornay like miscarries and there's just like blood everywhere and just I was just like, that to me was the most like freak out, like, this is not the movie I thought I was gonna see, like,
yeah, you don't tend to think of those mainstream thrillers as like really transgressive,
exactly, but like, man, like right there at the beginning I was just like, this is too much, I'm only 12, I can't deal with that.
Well, that was me in Star 80, like, this is funny now, but like I still vividly remember Eric Roberts putting his hand down his Speedo briefs and being so scandalized. I was like, he's just totally touching himself.
excellent.
It was the most authentic self-adjustment thing I've ever seen in a movie.
To this day.
Did that make a poster?
Why don't they have that category at the Video Music Awards?
You guys, most the VMAs are happening down the street from me tonight.
Oh, right. The VMAs is like right across the street from you, Katie.
I know. I think I'm going to go over to my friend's house who lives closer by to see what we can see. It's, yeah. It's the most interested I've been in the VMAs in a very long time.
Oh, right,
because
they're doing it from Brooklyn.
Yeah, time. It's right down the street.
God, imagine if you lived right down the street from the Academy Awards.
Oh, my God.
Just like stroll on down.
I would not want to live on that street, but...
Well, obviously not, but yeah.
But for that one night.
Yeah. Movies about actresses. I asked you guys to come prepared with your favorite biopic about an actress. I know what Nick's answer is.
Which is also my favorite movie about an alcoholic. So stop limiting me.
Wait, what are we talking about?
Well, I mean, it would be Francis, but it would also... But actually, I had... I'm a flake, so I hadn't even thought of Francis. I was thinking about Opening Night.
Okay.
The Jenna Rollins movie.
I don't know that one.
It's one of the movies that All About My Mother takes part of its plot from. Like, in the beginning, she's this totally bombed out, wasted actress who I think she's not driving. I think it's a chauffeur, but they run over a fan. And then she's like trying to get through a Broadway play, even though she's got 8 pints of gin in her at any given moment.
Sure.
And she's constantly haunted by the ghost of this fan who was banging on her window in the rain trying to get an autograph, and she unwittingly killed. And so that girl is showing up in a black cat suit to just beat the shit out of her occasionally, and nobody else can see her. That's pretty great.
Yeah. That movie sounds so much different than what I thought it was.
I have not seen it.
I've heard many good things about that performance, though.
Is it a cheat to say Soap Dish? Because, God, Sally Field and Soap Dish. And actually,
you're so good at the double features today.
Actually, double feature Soap Dish and Passion Fish, because that's sort of the soap opera actress.
Oh, I love that movie.
On both ends.
I never asked for the anal probe. That's going to sound really wrong out of context.
Yeah. We're just going to let it sit there. It's totally That movie is due a rewatch for me. I've seen it so long ago, but it's really, I remember very, very much liking it, at least Mary McDonnell and Elfrey Woodard, sort of their little acting duet.
Yes. I think mine at the moment, just because I've been thinking about it a lot, is Bullets Over Broadway, because it's about so many actresses and all of them are so, so funny.
Uh-huh. Yeah, God, Jennifer Tilly in that still kind of kills me.
Nick.
Oh. You're tempting me, but I'm trying really hard.
you would win an Oscar if you did that mimicry on screen, Nick.
I should try. I'll do a Jennifer Tilly biopic one day.
It'll be dueling.
And that'll be formally innovative.
Jennifer Tilly biopic.
The one that I kept focusing on, but I haven't seen it since I was in high school, and I don't know if it's at all good, but I keep thinking about Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, just for how crazy it is and how, like, when I think about it, it seems almost realistic about, like, what happens when you're a child star, like what Lindsay Lohan's life may be like right now. But I have no idea if, like, its overboiledness would stand up to adult viewing, so I don't know.
Wait, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane remake with Lindsay Lohan and Hilary Duff?
Oh my God, or Amanda Bynes.
Sure. Oh, God. That's maybe too much. That's too real.
Yeah, too real.
Although, which would be Baby Jane?
Well, that's why the Amanda Bynes thing is problematic. At least with Lindsay Lohan and Hilary Duff, you know who's who.
But we also know Lindsay Lohan's good at acting opposite herself, so just let her do it.
That's true.
Oh, my God.
I Know You Killed Me was... or I Know Who Killed Me? I Know You Killed Me? I can't remember. That was her audition for Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
I think I was going to go All About Eve because that's obvious, but I think I went with Passion Fish.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, mine changes daily because there are so many good
movies. Well, God,
this
is a
actresses.
Whole like wing of the
it's a whole
experience.
Yeah, it's a whole subgenre.
Does
yeah.
Nick have a shelf for this on his DVD?
I have a room.
I have a lifetime.
Yeah, exactly. This is far from over.
I'm far from over.
Speaking of actresses, I want to start by saying, like, Nick's tweet about Shailene Woodley was so great, and it's totally true. Like, I have never been, I did not enjoy her that much in The Descendants, but she is off the charts adorable and spectacular now.
Adorable, and yeah. So good. Like, that, I feel like that type is so hard to play. Like, the... you know, I don't even want to say average girl because she's a totally cute girl and totally right. with it and totally smart. But like, I think it might be fair to say the average girl is pretty with it and pretty cute and pretty smart. I'm just mm-hmm. gonna say that. And she just seems so unhung up. It's like so unactressy. There's so many great scenes where they don't cut, which is so great. And so you get to see 3 minutes of people acting continuously, and she's so
with
good at
each
that.
Other. Yeah,
with mm-hmm. each other in the same shot. Oh my god! Like,
like their whole big long like introduction scene is really strong.
Yes,
where with they them on at, when he's on the lawn.
Yeah, where they meet at that party and they walk around.
Oh yeah, oh that the first kiss scene. That's yeah. like such a great long take.
Fantastic, yeah. And that
well,
scene
just because you can watch, you can watch it play out on his face while she's talking, and that's my favorite. Like,
yep.
And you I just feel sort like, of see it coming, and she doesn't see it coming because she's busy trying to articulate herself. I really. Like
I feel
that.
Like he did a lot of not cutting on the like on the tail end of scenes. Like, there's a lot of awkward laughing and a lot of like things that happen in real life that never happen in movies that right. you don't think about not happening in movies until you actually see them and you're like, oh yeah, that is what talking to a guy you like in high school is like.
Or being told you're pretty when you didn't think you were. Like, there's so many moments. Yeah, there are so many moments in that movie that feel so real.
Mm-hmm. I've heard some people arguing that her character is does not have enough. Wants and her desires are not enough of the plot of the movie, and I felt pretty hard for this movie, so I kind of have a hard time seeing around that, even though I can imagine where that came from. Did any of you guys have that problem?
I thought we see her with her mom. It's not like everything about this character's life revolves around Miles Teller's character. I think mm-hmm. we see I feel like that's not the big sort of plotty kind of focus of the movie. We're like the stuff with Miles Teller and his mom and his dad and his family, like that's more central. Mm-hmm. But I think definitely we see, what is her name? Amy?
Amy.
I think we see Amy with her mom and Amy at home and Amy with her friend, her, who was it? Caitlin Dever as her friend.
Caitlin Dever, yeah.
I love and adore, and I'm so glad she's in two really good movies this year because she was great on Justified.
Oh yeah, because she's in Short Term 12 too.
She's in Short Term 12 too. She's
and she's excellent in that.
Yeah.
Much bigger part in Short Term 12 is worth noting.
Yeah, but I just love how she's this little sort of tiny little enforcer for Amy.
Yeah.
But I think that too. I think that she knows she gets a friend of her own and relationships that feel fairly clear mm-hmm. outside of this relationship. I think not every movie is going to be weighted equally in terms of the character, the time spent with each character, and I think that's fine. I think that can happen without being like a cipher or like a mm-hmm. you know
well sure
manic, whatever the version of manic pixie dream girl is for somebody who isn't
right
manic or pixie
and yeah. especially when you let the actors actually act in the scene without cutting away then yeah. you get sort of all that sort of you know extra stuff that you think might be happening just off the screen you know
yeah I wonder if it's I mean like you know I might be projecting but like, I wonder if people would even voice that objection if the filmmaking and the actress weren't doing so much that you'd even want to know more about Amy, because it's so easy to imagine the performance of that character where you wouldn't be curious about her, or she would be mm-hmm. totally functional in a movie that's obviously about him, and I think that movie is about him,
yes.
really. But mm-hmm. But the fact that you can even speculate into a movie where you'd spend your whole time with Amy, which is completely tempting to do... it's probably a good sign.
Yeah, well, and it's all. I think it's also true of Cassidy, the Brie Larson character. I think mm-hmm. Cassidy was her name.
Yep.
Where you get a sense, like in a way, all of these portraits of these girls are all about him and how they're dealing with sort of his persona and his hang-ups. But they have enough life in them that you get a sense of them wanting to move. Wanting to be something outside of him, too, which I think is a really good part of the movie.
Yeah.
And I thought Brie Larson was great.
Brie Larson's supposed to be the same age as Caitlin Dever in this movie, and a good bit older in Short Term 12, which I find funny.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I thought the cast was very, very sort of uniformly strong. And not only the kids, but all the sort of short, brief, not quite cameos, but like Bob Odenkirk as his boss at the store, and Andre Royo as his teacher, as his teacher in school. And I thought everybody was really just sort of contributing their very best, no matter how big the role was.
Which Kyle Chandler, man.
Yeah.
I want to shout out to, I'm going to pronounce his name wrong, Dayo Okunai, who plays the Brie Larson's new boyfriend, the guy who comes to confront him in the store. And it's such a funny scene. And like the way that
and
you think it's going to escalate.
You think it's going to
exactly.
Go
and it says a lot about both characters. And that guy, that type of like kind of the really clean cut, really popular guy who you can't really hate is so familiar to me from high school. And I thought the guy who played him did a great job with it. And he's going to be in the Endless Love remake. So that's happening.
Wow.
What? Sure. He's also in the Hunger Games. This guy's everywhere.
Speaking of movies I saw when I was too young and was scandalized by.
What,
Hunger Games?
Endless Love. I remember reading in a movie magazine about how they tricked Brooke Shields into showing the ecstasy face in her close-ups.
Oh, God. How?
And it was like by.
They showed her Francis.
It was like they were like pinching her toes or doing something like painful to her to get her to
Brooke
show
Shields'
the sex
childhood
face.
Makes me so sad and
so sad.
Hey, she got to work with Susan Sarandon. Not all bad.
It was all worth it to work with Susan Sarandon,
even if you had to play a child hooker.
I was very surprised by Spectacular Now. How much I was sort of my roller coaster relationship with Miles Teller just. Zigs when I expect it to zag every time. So,
did you even
know.
See 21 and Over? Because that might ruin everything.
I refused.
I recommend avoiding it.
I was so appalled by Project X, and it seemed like just an extension of Project X.
But then he was so good in Rabbit Hole.
That's the thing. That's what started. I loved him in Rabbit Hole. I also loved him in the Footloose remake. That I will go to my grave saying is better than people think it's going to be.
He is great in the Footloose remake.
But Project X and then everything I saw of 21 and Over just in like the trailers, I was just like, and then he gave some interviews where he just seemed kind of not great. But whatever, like he's young and he'll figure it out.
We need to wrap up, but since we're talking about next generation actors, I do want to mention that it's Kevanchanae Wallace's birthday this week. She turns 10 years old, so we want to wish her a happy birthday.
Well, her career's over, that old lady.
And I was wondering what you would like to give her for her birthday.
Can I sneak in one thing about Spectacular Now? Just
sure.
Really quickly. This is also about Next Generation, but I was so happy that I loved the movie so much, like on a blank slate, and then came home and got an email from a former student the next morning that he was the producer.
Yay!
And
wow.
So great. So Dan Cohen, young producers, yay. Fantastic.
Awesome.
You ruined my joke because I was, of course, going to say that young actors make the mistake of not knowing Hollywood history, so I was going to get her a DVD of Francis. I was also going to get her a boxing kangaroo for the next journalist who says anything about how to pronounce her name because I can't handle it anymore. She doesn't have to punch anybody in the face, but the kangaroo can do it. And I thought I would give her a script of Flora Plum because she can make it happen.
The future is in the hands of children now.
That's right.
That's
you know.
Like three gifts. You're like hogging her birthday party.
I know.
I'm a fan.
You're like the uncle who like doesn't know when to quit and like all the other aunts and uncles hate it.
I'm exactly that.
I'm getting
three's enough.
I'm getting her singing lessons because I'm still terrified by her response to reporters asking her if she could sing when she got the Annie role. She just shrugged her shoulders.
Okay.
Which, like, okay, this sort of dovetails into my present, because my present is a time machine that she can go back and take something else besides Annie. Or, like, her people or whatever can be kinder and more have better foresight. And this just doesn't seem like the best thing waiting down the road is Annie. I don't know. Maybe it'll be fantastic.
How many,
I hope it'll be
fantastic.
How many
parts are there for 10-year-old
well,
prodigies,
but
you know?
She doesn't have... I don't know. I don't know. I get so very concerned for her. I get so very protective and concerned for her. I don't know.
I think she has what might be an extremely small role in 12 Years a Slave. I feel like I remember this being a fact. I don't know that will be anything worth seeing in terms of her talent, but you know, that might be something else.
So you guys are the mean ants who were like, here's your lessons, here's your bad choices.
I am getting her a kitten purse because she's been rocking the puppy purse for a long time. And I think she needs to be equal opportunity to the cats of the world.
Aw, well, that is a nice one.
See,
whatever, I will be the mean ant. I'll be just, when she grows up and she's, you know, things are going well for her, she'll be like, thank God that mean ant was
thank you, Joe.
Real. Thank you, Joe, for keeping it real.
You two live in a peach.